Wait a second.
We're going now.
Okay. My name's Isabel. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
everybody. I have done this work as it's laid out in the Big Book with the help of God and my Big Book Step Study sponsor. Made all the amends I can make to this point, except, of course, I still have to make daily amends from time to time. And with God's help, I can live in 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. When I do, I'm just so grateful that I had done this process and that it's possible to live my best life. So, starting out by telling you that today's my 74th birthday. When I signed up, I knew it was my birthday, obviously. But, for a long, long time now, it's been clear to me that holidays and important days and what other people would consider special days, I had at some point to let them not be important or special, because those were occasions sometimes for me to eat inappropriately as a compulsive overeater. And so I started had to kind of take the power out of those, oh, it's your birthday, oh, it's your anniversary, or oh, whatever it is, you know. The opposite of that is that I do have things that I've planned around my birthday with friends and family, but my program is so much a part of my life that I can't imagine, unless very special circumstances and I wasn't here, that I wouldn't want to be at this meeting on my birthday or other important days in my life. So that's kind of the beginning of what, for me, is now my way of life. And so 10 and 11 together are something that keeps us on the path that we need to be on. It says in our first sentence there that it's suggested that we pray and meditate. So I love that word, suggest. But the actual step says that we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. And the as we understood him means you don't have to do it the way I do. You don't have to believe the way I do. You don't have to have the same higher power that I have. But in whatever way that you understand God, that step 11 would ask you to seek to improve your conscious contact with him. And therefore, in my mind, your relationship with your higher power, because it is a relationship. So when I think about prayer and meditation, it's that two-way conversation. Prayer being me talking to God or asking God for help or whatever, and the meditation part being me listening to my higher power and whatever direction he might have for me, or information or suggestions for me. But it includes at the end of that step, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. That just sort of distills what this program is all about, right? We want his will in our life, and we want to do this on a daily basis, and the avenue for that is prayer and meditation. So the next sentence talks about being shy about this matter of prayer. Growing up, I belonged to a very liturgical church, and so there were certain set prayers that we memorized as children. And, we said them, or repeated them, or recited them. And I could recite those prayers from memory, but they didn't mean anything to me. I didn't think about what each word meant, not like we do even in this book. Sadly, I could say them, and I could be thinking about something entirely different, or go through it really fast, and if you interrupted me, I'd have to start over, because I only knew it one way, like that. So I do think that prayer makes some people nervous. And what has happened to me in the number of years that I have been seeking this better relationship with God is that, people tell you about something that's happening in their life, and sometimes your answer will be, I'll pray for you. And that was my answer a lot of times. And then I realized that I would say that I would pray for somebody and then I would forget. And so what I've been doing the last few years is when somebody asks me that, whether it's on the phone or in person, I say, well, let me pray for you right now. And then that way there's an immediacy to the fact that they just shared something that they want prayer for, and then I won't forget. Now, some things are very, very important to me. I have a friend who has brain cancer, and she's been doing very well for about a year and a half, but she had a seizure on November 5th, and this is not a good sign for her. She has a very bad form of cancer. So now, and I had to admit to her in this text, I was praying for you very diligently, and then I thought everything was good. And so I slacked off. Mm-hmm. I'm praying for you. And I will commit again to pray for her very faithfully. So it's being shy, you know, and that may be uncomfortable for you to pray out loud in front of somebody or with somebody. But, you know, for me, prayer is nothing more than what's on my heart, and it's as natural to me as talking to Doug before the meeting or talking to Peggy before the meeting. It's just that I have that natural relationship with God now, and I'm not nervous about talking to him or talking to him in front of other people. It doesn't bother me anymore. It certainly did at one time. So it's telling us on the next page that this prayer and meditation will improve your life, and if you have the proper attitude and work at it, it's going to work. It's going to help you to have that relationship with God that you've always wanted. And then it says, which I love, that you could be vague about this and say, you know, you should pray about that, you know. Well, it doesn't leave it at that, because our book is so careful to say, when I say to you, I'm not going to be vague about this, I'm going to tell you really what I think would lead to good prayer and meditation. So in this part of it, it starts out with what we should do at night. And the word constructively is put in that first sentence. And so when I looked up constructively, it said leading to improvements or advances. And I like that, because the opposite is destructive, isn't it? Tearing down. And so when you're looking at your day or your life, do it constructively. When you're working with people and sponsoring with people, help them constructively, because we're trying to build each other up. We're trying to build a relationship with God, and that requires that we be conscious of wanting things to improve or advance. So it's a nice long list of things that you need to be aware of. They're a restating, in a sense, of what you did in your fourth step, if you wrote your fourth step the way that we do. So resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid is a form of that list, only in the fourth step. It's selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid. But that's because the promises of step 9 said that self-seeking will slip away. That's the reason it slipped out of that list. Okay? So it's still the same thing, though, because what you're apt to be is resentful or selfish or dishonest or afraid. At least I am. And it asks you, do you owe an apology? Have you kept something to yourself which you should be talking about with another person? And were you kind and loving toward all? What could you have done better? Were you thinking of yourself most of the time? Or were you thinking of what you could do for others? So then there's this little warning part, that you must be careful not to drift into worry or remorse or morbid reflection. It's a real pit for all of us, especially as addicts, because then we get, as Camille so eloquently told us all about her pity parties that she had from time to time, or she might have said pity pot, and then I pictured this big outdoor toilet where she was inviting people in to the pity pot. But you know, in any event, we don't want to go into that place that takes us the wrong direction, not constructive, destructive. And so morbid reflection is one of those things. Then it goes on to talk about what do you do in the morning. Doug's celebrating today, how many years?
33.
33 years of sobriety. And so I'm going to give him a coin later. But here's the coin that he chose. It says one day at a time, and on the back it says the greatest position we have is the 24 hours directly in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's beautiful.
And that's what this step is about. the 24 hours that you have directly in front of you each day. Because yesterday's gone. Whatever you did, say you're sorry, make an apology, clear it up. But you've got today, and it's fresh, and it's right in front of you. And so you can consider your plans for the day. That's okay. But, you know, then we want to invite God into the process and ask him to direct our thinking. This is so critical to my recovery right at this moment, because it's my thinking that I'm asking God to change. Mm-hmm. It's my thinking when I have a negative thought about my husband, immediately to stop it right there. Don't let the second and the third and the fourth one happen. Stop it right there and say, God, I don't want to go in that direction at all. Stop me right now. That first thought that's not healthy and not good for me and always leads to trouble. So am I subject to self-pity? Oh, yes. That's probably one of my weakest spots, self-pity, especially when I'm so self-righteous about everything I've ever done for you. Oh, you know, all that. You've probably heard that speech maybe more than once. My mother had 9 children, and she would be ironing and crying sometimes. She'd be ironing and crying. And I would say, Mom, what's going on? She'd say, nothing. I'm all right. And God knows what was on her mind. But, you know, it was something about, like, you know, I've done all this for you guys, and you're all leaving me, and you're all getting married, and whatever. You know, and, it's just a human frailty that we have sometimes of thinking about how wonderful we are and nobody appreciates us. So it's a pit. So you've got some things that you can think about, but here's really an important thing, and you've maybe heard this from your sponsor. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So a lot of times your sponsor will ask you, just exactly what were your motives when you were doing such and such? You know, because at the heart of it, if you'll be honest, which if you're doing a 4-step in Big Book Step Study, you better be honest, or you're wasting your time, truly. So whatever your motive was, say it. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I guess I was hoping that, you know, blah, blah, blah. So you got to check your motives. And then it talks about indecision. It talks about when we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision, then we can relax and take it easy. You know, relaxing and taking it easy is, for some of us, maybe how we think that God is going to operate. I can remember as a depressed young woman that I thought that being motivated to clean my house or do the dishes or whatever, I thought it would come on me like in a wave of creative energy. So I'd lay on the couch depressed saying, okay, I know I'm going to feel it any time now. It didn't happen that way. Because we're asking God to help us, and then you can relax and take it easy. Sometimes, this is about action. So don't struggle. Sometimes we're surprised how the right answers come after we've, you know, let God have a hand in helping us make some good decisions. So you pray, you ask God to help you. On top of page 87, that whole top of that paragraph, I was thinking about it as we were reading. You know, there comes a point after you've gotten a good sponsor and been sponsored by a good sponsor, there's this feeling that it's time for you to go out and do some stuff, to sponsor people, to raise your hand at an appropriate time in the meeting, and then, you know, you get a sponsee and all that. And why is that? It's because you don't want a dependent or codependent relationship with your sponsor. It is good to have one. It's good to have somebody to call. It's good to have somebody to check in with. But the truth is, right here, it says, you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to do some absurd things. How else are you going to learn? Seriously. You can't keep your kids in your house so that they don't make a mistake. And you can't keep your sponsees so close to you that they don't even know what to do next. It would be wrong. So if they make some mistakes, they make some mistakes, and you talk about it and whatever. But out of that comes some independence from the sponsor and dependence on God. And that is what we want, is dependence on God and not on a person. Because your sponsor and every other human being in your life is going to fail you. If you don't know that yet, hang on. So then it tells you how to end that meditation, to pray something. For me, it's the seven-step prayer that says, okay, I'm ready to go out and do my life today, and I want to do your will, and I need your help. So down at the bottom of that page, it talks about being agitated or doubtful and what you should do when that happens. And you ask God for the right thought or action, okay? And maybe the answer doesn't come right away, so everybody always says, then just do the next right thing, which is probably pretty good advice. We do remind ourselves constantly that we're not running the show, because that's a really important element of it. You know, somebody I know said the other day that if they really wanted God's will, they wouldn't have such a tight schedule and such a big list that there's no room for God to intervene at all and say, hey, why don't you do so-and-so? Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have time. I just don't have, that's not on my list today. So leave some space for God to talk to you. And humbly saying to yourself many times each day, thy will be done. You know, and that's appropriate just almost anywhere under any circumstances. A reminder that you're not in charge. So a good friend of mine always says, here's where it says, we are then in much less danger. You are always going to be in danger of these things, but you'll be in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. And you're going to be more efficient because you won't be so tired running around trying to create everything to your liking. That is very tiring. I know that. Because, you know, it's energy foolishly spent, and you only have so much energy. It works. It really does. And then here's a really important sentence. We alcoholics are undisciplined. And this same friend that always says you're in much less danger, he said the definition of undisciplined for him is unable or unwilling to take instruction. Ooh. There's been many times in my life when people tried to help me and gave me good advice and suggestions and help, but I was hell-bent on doing things my way. No. Let me try it this way. Let me try it 15 times this way. You know, like over and over. So I really liked that he said that. So this is not all. There is action and more action, which we're going to go on to in the next chapter. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.